The police came and it took 10 policemen to carry him away. He beat up two of them so severely that he was sent to jail at that time. That was one occasion when it showed me it was right for me to be in the practice. Because practicing was a very healthy thing to do. Another night, when my children were all at school, this was some years later, and the little one was at the school as well, and I was in a different house alone. And some friends and I had driven home from church on a Wednesday evening, and we bought ice cream. We were sitting in their car eating the ice cream, and then I went into the house, and I didn't realize that my husband had broken into the house. And when I opened the door, he was behind the door. And in the dark, he grabbed me by the hair and began beating me with his fist like you'd beat a man. My nose began to bleed and my teeth went right through my lips, and I fell to the ground and he began kicking me and bruised quite a part of my body. On that night, I actually thought he didn't know where to stop and he was going to kill me. And I was pleading with him when suddenly the phone rang. And he said to me, "Don't dare answer that telephone." And I began to think, "Dear God, what will I do? Will I answer the phone or not? Will I ask the people at the other end to get me some help? Will I tell them to go to another practitioner? What will I do?" Now, usually, as soon as my husband had beaten me, he quietened down. He was always very sorry after he had done it, but he kept on doing it. He was standing against the wall. He was warning me not to pick up the phone. But I picked it up, and I knew from experience that my practice was my safety and my security. On the other end of the phone was a woman alone in desperate need, and there was no way I could have told her what was happening to me. So I began to declare the truth to her and to assure her that she was not alone, that God was right with her in that room, and that because God was there, everything she needed was there. God was her husband. He was her father, he was her mother, he was her physician, he was her friend, he was her lawyer, he was her comforter, he was everything. And I knew that that was true for me. There was a box of tissues on the desk and I began to clean up the mess. Do you know that by the time I'd finished that phone call, my husband was standing against a wall and all the color had drained out of his face. I was able to go over and take his face in my two hands and kiss him and say to him, "I forgive you because this is not you. You're being handled by evil." He said to me, "You frighten me." He said, "If you would fight me, I could understand it. But I don't understand this." And he ran out of the house and left me alone. Those bruises and everything, the cuts, healed up within 2 days because I didn't feel any resentment. Because by this stage, I was beginning to learn that I was not a victim and also that he was not a villain. That was the hardest part. I have been reading a wonderful article for years by Paul Stark Seeley called "Neither Villain Nor Victim." And that helped me a great deal. But I'd also been reading an article by Mary Baker Eddy called "Love Your Enemies." It's in prose works. In my own prose works at home, my old one, I used it so much that the print is nearly off the pages. Because while I was beginning to learn that I had to stop seeing myself and my children as victims, Before we could progress, I also had to stop believing that he was a villain. Now that's something I thought I could never do, because I had terrible dreams and nightmares, and my children had. I never knew when he would break into the house. I never knew when I would see him. Sometimes he would sleep in my garage all night, and I would go to go out in the morning, and he would immediately run through the door. Or I would go into town, and Belfast is a small city. I would be frightened that I would meet him. If I did meet him, I usually got a lot of verbal abuse from him, and it would upset me for days. It seemed almost impossible to get away from this villain picture, and also from the idea that the IRA were villains. I had to see that I and the people of my community were not the victims of the IRA, but I also had to see that the IRA and my husband were not villains. And it seemed an almost impossible task until I began to read this chapter and really read it and study it, or this article. I'll read you just a bit of it, but if you've never read it, I would highly recommend it. Love your enemies. Who is thine enemy that thou shouldst love him? Is it a creature or a thing outside thine own creation? Can you see an enemy except you first formulate this enemy, and then look upon the object of your own conception? What is it that harms you? Can height or depth or any other creature separate you from the love that is omnipresent good, that blesses infinitely one and all? Simply count your enemy to be that which defiles, defaces, and dethrones the Christ image that you should reflect. Whatever purifies, sanctifies, and consecrates human life is not an enemy, however much we suffer in the process. Shakespeare writes, "Sweet are the uses of adversity." Jesus said, "Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you." I love the bit where she says, "Whatever purifies, sanctifies, and consecrates human in the process." I believe that my thinking and that my life was not being an enemy. I began to read my life, because no one ever turned me to God like he did. And I began to be so grateful for that, to realize that. I began to stop envying people who had wonderful husbands. I began to realize I had the most wonderful husband of all, and that was God. And what I was being taught from this experience was so wonderful that I wouldn't have missed it. Mrs. Eddy goes on to say, "We have no enemies. Whatever envy, hatred, revenge, the most remorseless motives that govern mortal mind, whatever these try to do, shall work together for good to them that love God." Why? Because he has called his own, armed them, equipped them, and furnished them defenses impregnable. Their God will not let them be lost. And if they fall, they shall rise again, stronger than before the stumble. The good cannot lose their God, their help in times of trouble. Those words were so dear to me. That's not the whole article. But those words were so dear to me that I lived with them. And I began to see that he was not an enemy, that he was my friend. I tried many times for 15 years to heal the situation. I kept bringing him back to try to heal it, to try to understand where he was at, to try to be compassionate, because I knew that he had been brought up in a violent home as well. I tried to understand what made him like that. But in the end, I was forced to divorce him because the violence became more and more an everyday occurrence. It used to be maybe every couple of months. It began to be every day. And in the end, I had to divorce him. And that's just about 18 months ago. Now, divorce in Northern Ireland is not easy. And when we got into the court, it was a very long, drawn-out affair. You see, the laws in Northern Ireland are different to your laws in America. Because of the violence in Northern Ireland and the situation in our country, our jails are full to overflowing. Our lawyers are overworked. So domestic violence comes way down in the bottom of the list. And so does divorce, which can take a long time. On the day of the divorce, we had to go to court. And it lasted all day long, this court case. The police and my lawyer and barrister had a file on my husband as big as this for all the things that he had done over the years, of the many exclusion orders we had put on wherever I had to live, and the many times he broke them, and all the evidence from police, and it all had to be brought out. And it was a nasty, nasty day in court. My husband was the one who was in the witness box most of that day. He told many, many lies and got himself quite confused and mixed up. When it came to 4 o'clock, and we'd been there since 10 o'clock, and every time we had a break in the court, my husband and I had to sit outside in a little room with a policeman and a policewoman, and he was shouting all this filthy abuse at me. But I kept very calm and didn't answer it, and kept saying to myself, "You're not my enemy, you are my friend, and I thank God for you." So I wasn't frightened. At 4 o'clock, the judge and everybody in the court were looking wearied. And the judge finally said, "Listen, this woman wants a divorce and I'm going to grant it." He said, "I don't know how she ever got mixed up with you in the first place." He said, "Because you are the worst liar and cheat. You've cheated this woman. She's brought up her family alone and she's to be greatly admired." He was appreciating me all roads and saying all these things about my husband. He said, "Before I grant this divorce, Mrs. Smith, is there anything that you would like to say?" And I said, "Yes, Your Honor, there is." He put me into the witness box. He said, "What is it?" I said, "I would like to say, Your Honor, that today all this evidence has been against my husband. And it looks very, very nasty. It looks like he is a vicious animal. And No one here seems to be able to defend them or say a good word about them. Well, I would like to say something good about them before I divorce him. I said, because he's not all bad. There's nobody all bad.